Tenemos aquí la colaboración de una compañera que les ayudará en la traducción. Entonces, os animo a que preguntéis absolutamente todo lo que queráis, ¿vale? Os intentaremos responder en todo lo que nosotros sepamos. Y nada más, espero que os animéis. Y ¿alguien quiere ser el primero? Sí que os agradecería es que si tenéis alguna de las personas en particular a quien queráis dirigir la pregunta, digáis el nombre y si no, pues el más cercano a la pregunta será la persona que lo resuelva.
Bueno, hablaré en español. Sorry. es en general. ¿Cuándo se podrá comprar las gafas, las HoloLens en España?
Yes, I'll take that one. So we don't have any plans announced yet to sell HoloLens outside of the U.S. Of course, plans evolve, and I would expect we've got a HoloLens website, and that would be the place to visit to see as plans evolve. As I mentioned earlier in the keynote, you only need a U.S. address. You don't need to be a U.S. person to acquire one. So if I were to recommend a strategy for HoloLens now, it would be to make friends with my colleagues in the US to obtain one. It'll be a multi, you know, I don't know how long before other countries light up, but HoloLens is a multi-year journey for us.
Okay.
Maybe I can add something. I don't know. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Are you on mute?
No. Yes, you can now. And just to confirm that, in France, I'm working with an ISV, and they managed to have two HoloLens by doing this process. So you can do it. I think you will be out maybe of the classical support, no access, but you still can ship back to the US if you've got any problem with that. But it could be a good idea if you've got project to have it, to start testing it, even if you've got the emulator to start with. We know it's better if you've got the full device, but some of the people I know in France managed to have it before Microsoft France, which is funny, so.
Okay, thanks.
I have a question to Matt about this device hub, or how it was called. I didn't understand it really. If those devices don't speak TCP, IP and stuff, is this some hardware device you use, or it's some software magic? Maybe you can elaborate a bit how it works.
There are many reasons why devices may not be able to speak TCP/IP. So I'll give you one example I live with every day. So my house is all automated, right? So all the way from light switches to door locks. And for example, these devices, they are battery-based, and so for example, a door lock. I need it to last, the battery needs to last a year. I'll never use a door lock if I have to replace batteries every month, right? If that device spoke Wi-Fi, the battery would never last a year. So what these devices do, they have standards. They're one of standard called Z-Wave. And Z-Wave is like a mesh network. So one device works as a repeater to another device that talks to a central. So in my house, there is this base station that talks TCP/IP and talks to internet. And then he has this Z-Wave protocol to talk to all these devices. So these devices, they are unable to reach internet. The only thing they can do is to talk to the station, and then the station goes and talks to internet. Then the same analogy applies to industries, like industrial plants, where you have lots of sensors and things like that. Those will never, for security, for a bunch of reasons, they cannot just talk to internet. So all of them usually get managed by a central station that works as the gateway that talks to them and then go talk to internet and back and talk to them again. So there are many scenarios where either for security reasons or because the device is limited or because of battery life or because of, there are lots of reasons why specific devices will never get the ability to just talk Wi-Fi and go to internet. And that's why in those cases you need a gateway to do this interface between the devices and something else, either internet or some other computer. Does that answer the question? No.
A bit, but not really. Like, if there is this gateway already, what is the role of the Azure Data Hub in all this picture? Like, the device talks to internet, so it kind of does everything, but it's necessary.
Oh, so there are several devices where you don't need gateway at all. So these Raspberry Pi devices here, they're plugged straight to internet. I don't need a gateway. There's no gateway in this story. They go straight to Azure IoT Hub, and they keep pumping data. Actually, one of the problems I had yesterday when I had two of each device, one of them, the Ethernet port, died. So I turned it on, and I think during the trip it got damaged or something. So I had to replace it. But basically, they have an Ethernet port. It's running Windows. It has TCP IP, connects to internet, it gets the IP from the HCP, and just talks to internet. That's one group of devices. There's another group of devices that are not capable, and that's when you need the gateway, because they will never just talk to Azure or Amazon or anything. They need something to do that interface. In some cases, Azure Gateway is the option. Gateway is just basically a framework that you take it. It's an open source framework. You take and write that for your device. There are other devices that they come with their own gateways as well. So there are cases where, like the example I gave with the Z-Wave, where you don't need the Azure Gateway at all because the Z-Wave already has a station that does that for you. So it depends on the case.
Okay, now it's clear. Thank you.
Hello. Yes, a question regarding Xamarin. Currently, Xamarin is using Mono as the version of .NET for cross-platform development. And I want to know if there is some plans to use in the future .NET Core.
So he's using Mono. And
right.
He wants to know if there is plans for the future to use .NET Core instead.
Okay, so shall I say something about that? So we did announce at Build that we have these different stacks at the moment. We have classical .NET framework, the full traditional tied to Windows .NET. We have .NET Core, which is portable and which runs on other OSs as well, which is a subset of that. And since we acquired Xamarin, we actually now have Mono as well, which, and obviously, there's a lot the same between those three, but there's also bits that are not the same. So we have started a process to rationalize that, and the goal is to come up with a .NET standard, which will be common across all of those. And certainly a subset of that will be still portable, will still be .NET Core. So you can expect a convergence of these different platforms within the relatively, you know, we're working hard on that to combine these and make a consistent story across each of them. Our goal is to make all these stacks work together and make our developers' lives easier. So we're definitely sort of working hard towards that goal.
Hi. My question is about the Windows 10 IoT Core, maybe Steve, maybe Matt. Is there an estimated release date of IoT Core for Raspberry Pi 3 or maybe DirectX support or PWM or similar?
For Raspberry Pi 3, that should be a part of the anniversary release. I think all the drivers will be online by then. I've been, my previous job, I was actually working on Windows IoT, so my context might be a couple of months old, but that was the last I knew. PWM, I believe, was going to be part of anniversary release as well, but I actually don't know for sure. I don't know if, yeah. I don't know the answer to that for sure, but if you talk to me afterward, I could certainly find out.
Thank you.
Yeah, continuing with the same theme, For me, the IoT strategy is clear from the Azure part, but about the devices is not so clear because of at least of the previous prices of the previous versions of Windows Embedded. So, which is the strategy now? Do you plan to reduce or remove the pricing of Windows 10 IoT, or will through, for example, .NET Core, will Linux devices be able to connect to Azure?
I think the answer to both your questions is yes. For Windows IoT, like I think of IoT devices like a giant pyramid. And at the top of the pyramid, you have big, expensive devices, MRI machines, X-ray machines, fancy retail cash register machines that cost thousands and thousands of dollars each. Typically, those devices are actually built around desktop Windows because they run Win32 apps, and they're basically computers. And then at the bottom of the pyramid, you have door locks and sort of the small devices that speak Zigbee or Z-Wave or 6LoWPAN or some tiny network protocol. And then you have lots of stuff in between. Windows is great for devices at the top, and kind to maybe to the middle of the pyramid, Windows is great. Below that, you've got lots of microcontroller devices that are too small to run any operating system, really, not just Windows, or typically just some microcontroller firmware. Windows IoT Core is free. For commercial devices, there's a license cost. I think it's $5 or $10 US for people that want to build things in volume. They want support from Microsoft, that sort of thing. But if you want to build a device and you don't care about getting support from Microsoft, you can use Windows IoT Core and build those devices. IoT Core, of course, doesn't have a Windows shell, so you could run all the Windows apps, you can do all of that, but if you actually want the Windows experience, usually that's a Windows version that you would pay a license fee for, or it would be an upgrade to Windows 10 if you're, at least up until July 29th, if you're using a previous release. And then the other question about IoT Hub, I believe the IoT Hub libraries for non-Windows OSs are up, they're there, ready for you to use for a variety of different operating systems.
Yeah, related with Xamarin, is there any work in progress related with a visual designer for Xamarin Forms, something like that?
So I'm not sure about the, for Xamarin Forms, I mean, that's part of the stack. We're still kind of working with Xamarin. It's been a fairly recent acquisition, as you know. So we're still working with the team on more closer integration. So we're looking at bringing UWP and Xamarin closer together, and we'll certainly be enhancing the tooling and incorporating new stuff into Visual Studio time goes on. But I don't have a specific answer to you. But you can be sure that we'll be working on enhancing the offerings in that space.
Okay. Thank you.
Is general. What are the plans about the migration of Windows Communication Foundation and Workflow Foundation to .NET Core?
I don't know that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess I can. Part of the answer is WCF was built. When WCF was built, the scenarios we had were very enterprise scenarios where the SOAP protocol was the thing that was going to be the standard with WS stars, WS transaction, WS this, WS that. And then we built all of that, and the world suddenly started moving in another direction. Say, now we want REST. We want everything simple. And if you look at every investment Microsoft is making so far, WCF is not very high in that priority. Like, we're looking at Web API, we're looking at Node.js, we're looking at simple REST APIs. We're not looking at making super huge investments in WCF SOAP. So I don't have the answer, but I would guess that this would be very low in terms of priorities for .NET Core, because .NET Core is more about being cross-platform, super fast, super simple, and that aligns way more with REST. And that's why ASP.NET is already in that direction, right?
Okay, thanks.
Hi. I have a question about Project Centennial.
Yep.
I'm not sure if I pronounced correctly. Can you please tell how it works under the hood? Like, what's the mechanism? Is it a container or?
It's can you hear me? Hello. Yes.
Yep.
It works well.
Thanks.
Now the idea is it's like a container, like Docker. It's a Docker. I think it's Docker because during build they told us it was Docker. So the idea is really to isolate from the Windows system as a registry. So it's a lot of cool engineering stuff to do some redirection in order that for the app, it doesn't know it's currently, it thinks it's going to write to the real registry, but we're going to redirect that to a different container to avoid messing up the system. So it's really based on the Docker, you know, technology, architectures. It was one of the cool things we dream of for years to have something like that. And it's now on Windows, so it's always working basically. Now, if you need more details, I know there is a session, a 1 hour session, that's going deeper than what I've done in 15 minutes. And there is a Q&A, but they're not really explaining if you're really interested in how we manage to catch the API and redirect. I don't know in which level of detail you'd like to know, so that you will be able to find the name of people working on this specific technology on the build session during 1 hour. But basically, this is Docker. Yeah,
but in a nutshell, you know, in a nutshell, your app runs just the same as it is, and it might think it's writing to C colon whack, writing files into bits of what it sees to be the extended Windows file system, but we virtualize it, we put it in a sandbox, so it's actually writing into its own a private area that looks like Windows to it. And the same with the registry, we give it its own proper, its own little registry hive to work against. So it just means your own software doesn't have to it doesn't change because it doesn't need to know any, it doesn't see any different. All the writes to the file system, to the registry are all virtualized, so it can sit in this nice little sandbox and you get this beautiful, it just runs as it always did, but you also get that lovely clean uninstall as well. So you can completely uninstall it, it's gone, it doesn't leave anything behind. And you get all the lovely benefits of that Apex packaging, but with your classical Windows apps.
Thank you.
I would just add, since it takes a village to answer the Centennial question, apart from the file and registry virtualization, the app really runs in full trust. So it can do stuff on the system like a Win32 app can do on the system, although the install and uninstall process is kind of clean and virtualized. That doesn't mean that it's in some safe, can't destroy the system type container. It's absolutely in a level of trust where any Win32 app can, it can do what any Win32 app can do. One other addition I'd make there is that Centennial, you know, we'll keep improving it as time goes on. So there are some things that apps do at install time, for example, that Centennial cannot support today. So, for example, installing a driver. That would be something that Centennial can't support today, maybe later, maybe not, not sure yet. But there are limits to what Centennial will do.
Thank you. You have answered second my question.
Excellent.
Question also about Centennial. Figure out machine to separate apps that have to share some files or read the same registry entries. So how Centennial, if those things are virtualized, is it possible? Do we have to deploy the same apps on the same container? Is it easy?
So Centennial's not going to support that kind of scenario. Your app needs to be fairly clean, self-contained. If it's got a dependency on other apps, well, that's the whole point of Centennial, really, is that over time you can extend it and you can start calling out regular UWP things. So that kind of scenario, you're into a little bit of development, and you'd have to kind of have Centennial-enabled versions of both of those apps, and then you can use all of the app-to-app communication mechanisms that we've got. Well, actually, you could use Win32 ones. There's still Win32 apps, but more like it would be a good opportunity to start moving towards UWP, and you could use any protocol associations or app services or any of the cool stuff we've got in UWP. But you'd have to effectively replace that communications channel, and obviously how you do that would be application specific. So no, it won't work out of the box, that one, but so a little bit of work you'd have to do for that.
Thank you.
Hello. You showed today the Quake 3 on Project Centennial, and at the build at San Francisco you showed the Witcher 3 and Age of Empires. So you're pushing effort to make games on Universal Windows platform, but right now it doesn't have so many configuration or graphics settings. You're making, for example, Quantum Break, but it has so many problems in the PC version. So you're going to improve the gaming part of UWP or something, or you're going to...
I can answer to that, yes. So I've got, just to explain you, I've got a 4K machine with SLI at home, so I'm very concerned about that question. And I've been discussing with the team, so currently we're using DirectX 12, which is pretty cool. At the beginning, it was quite complex for various reasons to unlock, for instance, the frame rate, or to have access to SLI systems. So we shipped a first version. Recently, there was an update to Windows 10 to unlock the frame rate. So if you want to cut up the VSync, if you like to have the number of FPS you like on your beautiful screen, you can do that now on the system level, which means that the game also needs to implement the same update. So the first game that will use that is Forza 6 Apex you got on the store. And then later on, we'll have support for SLI in order to have the same kind of, I would say, feature, performance, cool thing you've got on Steam, for instance, or whatever platform you're using to have access to your games. So yes, it's in the plan, and we recently blogged about that we're currently improving the level of support.
My question is about Windows Mobile. The strategy of Windows 10 Mobile is very confusing for the popular people. They don't see on the supermarket, and it's very difficult to buy one. And the blogs always say Windows Mobile is dead. Why is Microsoft focus on Is Microsoft focused on business, or is waiting partners for with Windows Mobile?
Well, rather than debug the why, I could tell you what we're doing. What we're doing is we're spending lots of engineers on continuing to improve Windows Mobile. You've seen some of the work on Continuum. I think what you're seeing is lots of co-evolution as we finally combine Windows into one common core across all the universal platform family of devices. We can do some work once, and we can accrue value to all the different versions of Windows. So that, we believe, is going to start paying great dividends for Windows Mobile. Right now, I would say our focus area for Windows Mobile is the set of Windows enthusiasts and business customers with whom we're picking up a great deal of traction. Don't count us out of the game. We're going to continue pressing on Windows Mobile, and we're going to do great things.
Thanks.
Hi. Can you say, this is a global question, can you say something about the current situation of Silverlight?
What situation would that be? There are many Silverlight situations.
Which Silverlight? Yes.
The browser version? Yeah. Which? You're talking about Silverlight for Windows Phone development, or Silverlight for the browser, meaning? The browser, yes. It's complex for me to say browser, you know.
What is that?
Browser, yeah, browser, yeah. And well, I think we already said what was the plan. For the Edge team, we decided not to ship support for Silverlight because we are going in a plugin-free system on the web. You can even see that Chrome is going to stop supporting Flash, except for a whitelist. Very few websites will be allowed to use Flash. So in 1 year, I would say that nobody will use any kind of plugin in the web, which is, I think, a good idea, because we need to use web standard. You've seen the level of support we got in web standard. For the support level, we were committed to support it for 10 years, which means that we have some people still maintaining it for security fixes or big problem, and which means that if you develop an application as an ISV based on Silverlight, and it will still run. I know that sometimes it could be frustrating to see that all the innovation went somewhere else, but the application still always works. And when I'm discussing with ISV on Silverlight, because I was a Silverlight evangelist, so I know people are coming back to me, because now I'm talking about HTML5, and I'm telling them that hopefully people writing Silverlight application manage to have some good web services or backend, or web structured and architectured, so then they start to need thinking about shifting to HTML5 on the long-term strategy, because if you're waiting for the end of support, it could be a problem. I've met some customers that wait too long. In France, particularly for government application we've got, most of the French organizations are waiting for the end of support, and then they have some trouble to shift. So it's still supported, which means that we are not going to innovate anymore in this specific area. So you need to think about, I don't know, start thinking about another technology to shift.
By the way, how many people here know what TypeScript is?
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, okay. So when you show C# developers TypeScript, usually they lose the fear of building a lot of stuff in JavaScript. Yeah, because you learn that you get all the benefits of a compile language, you get predictability, you get refactoring. So I think what you need to keep in mind is looking at when Silverlight was created and looking now, like, there are some pretty good technologies in the web space you can really rely on heavy systems without Silverlight. And I think it's harder to justify having a plugin when you have all of that, right?
And can I just add something, which is, I'll answer the question you didn't ask. So there's the other flavor of Silverlight as well. If anybody's been using the app version of Silverlight before, which we used for building Windows Phone apps on Windows Phone 7, 7.1 through to 8, and 8.1 actually. So if you've got any apps like that, we've got a great toolkit from a partner of ours, which will really help you convert that application, that Silverlight application code, up to Windows 10 UWP. So it's a good route for taking any code you develop using the app version, Windows Phone app version of Silverlight, converting that up to UWP. So that's a good route forward for people who've got any code in that area.
I have a question about Project Centennial. I know it was one of the multiple bridges that were built to bring existing apps to Universal Windows Platform. One of them was the HTML bridge. There was a Project Islandwood, which was the iOS to UWP platform. And the missing one is the Project Astoria, which was the bridge to bring Android apps to UWP platform. So is it, I know more or less it's dead in the water, so my question is, the recommended approach to migrate an existing Android app is to go with Xamarin, or there will be something like Project Astoria Reborn?
My suggestion would be Xamarin. Yeah, the Astoria project is one that we haven't expressed a definitive plan for going forward. And as a result, I would suggest if you need to get some work done today, that would be the path I would use to get some work done today.
And the iOS is still, I think it's still on the GitHub and it's still getting updated, the Islandwood project.
That's right. There's still some pretty active development going on out in the open on Project Islandwood. It's still, I would say, partially complete in that if you have a complete iOS app that kind of takes advantage of a lot of different iOS services, maybe a portion of that translates over pretty well into Windows, and then you end up writing some Windows-specific code. So what we find with Islamwood is it really depends on the kind of app you're building. Sometimes you get a great deal of utility out of Islamwood, and sometimes you don't.
Thank you.
The best one is the web.
Yes, another question. We have a lot of devices from customers that are running in Windows Mobile, but not Windows Phone, Windows Mobile, the previous one. And it is a problem because our industrial devices are very expensive, and they still continue buying these kind of devices. And you know, last month, they have problems because they have to choose Android devices because not many with Windows Mobile. Microsoft is going to give an answer to that part of the market.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I mean, the history here for context is that Microsoft had a very rich OEM partner ecosystem built around Windows Mobile 6, Windows Mobile 6.5, particularly building industrial and ruggedized devices for couriers and retail shopping and all those kinds of scenarios. As Windows Mobile strategy shifted toward consumer with Windows Phone 7 for a few years, that left an opportunity for Android to come in, and Android had a very strong offering that they remain a strong competitor. What you're seeing now is with Windows 10, we've redoubled our efforts with a number of these OEMs. So Zebra, which used to be Motorola, which used to be Symbol, with Panasonic, with Bluebird, and with a couple of other OEMs, you can now find Windows 10 handheld devices that are ruggedized, industrialized, custom packaging used for different scenarios. So these are just starting to reach market, but I think you can expect to see more of these.
It could be great, a kind of a grade for that devices, because to change all these devices for customers is very difficult. But, well, you do what you can, I understand.
My question is about Windows 10 SDKs. We know that in the slow and fast rings, we have this anniversary SDK and this 240 and 586. These are now release branches. And my question is, okay, we have this possibility to take a minimum target on our apps. Microsoft, for each release, production releases, will ensure to update all Windows devices so we can be sure that when I take minimum target to anniversary SDK, they will be 100% of all devices with this SDK. Or maybe it could be something like Android and his fragmentation. You must take a look, okay, 10% of Windows devices are 500x86 SDK, and so you must to adapt your application to this version, or, you know?
Yeah, can I say that, yeah. Yeah, so, in my demo, you know, I did file new project in the UWP, and you get a pop-up window on file new project, and it says which versions of the UWP SDK do you want to target? And you're quite right. You know, you said today the release branches 10.2.40 was the last summer, the first release, and then we've had
Another one that's gone out is 10.5.86, and we're currently working on the next one, which is going to be the anniversary SDK, which currently to the insider ring, to insiders, is 14.3.42 or something. But when you are putting out an app out there for people to download from the store, you've really got two choices. So you could actually have a 10.2.40 max, 10.2.40 min version in the store, and alongside in the store, you could have a 10.5.86 max, 10.5.86 minimum in the store. And the point about that is the max version, it will still run on later versions in the future. So you're not limiting, it will only run on those. So the max is a kind of a, this is what I've tested it on, and when it runs on later ones, it will still run. But your choice really for what to do with a mix of devices out there, and things with consumer Windows 10, people will, once they're on the Windows 10 train, they will get upgraded, and the upgrades will be pushed to them via Windows Update. With business, there's a little bit more of a lag. They have a business release cycle, so they will be a little bit behind, a bit more further out there, and you have older versions out there for longer. But you as an app developer, yeah, you could have distinct versions out there in the store, but that would make a lot of work for you. So in many cases, the way to handle this is to create your app that's targeting deliberately multiple versions. And if you are using a newer API, you can basically use feature detection code. So you can figure out at runtime saying, does this API exist on this, where at runtime, if it is, does this API, is it present? And there's a code, there's the API information, API you can use to detect that. And if it is, you light it up with the newer SDK code. Otherwise, it will still run in the kind of the older down-level code. So that's a complication as well, I know that, but it may be better than having different versions of your app in the store. So it's a decision for you as a developer, but feature detection is the way to go, which actually is very similar to what we saw with the web apps, finding out if you're running on Windows, that's feature detection as well. It's a pretty common technique, Android as well. The same problem exists where you've got this continually updating population of devices out there, and you as a developer, you've got to kind of target and multiple of those. Does that answer your question?
To complement on that, you can always instrument your application to see what your customers or users are actually using, to see if you can, if you invest in that area or not. If most or all of your customers are using the latest version, you can forget about the other one. But of course, feature detection is the way to go.
But the conversion rate, if you've got the numbers.
when there was this demo about improved graphics, thingies, and so on, I have to say that when I saw the code for doing the blur and stuff, I got a bit scared because I'm a lazy developer and that was a lot of code to write to just get it working. Is it just because it's kind of work in progress or just because feature needs to be so? And is there plans to have some shorter syntax, easier way how to do it?
So that's the composition stuff?
Yes.
Yes. So. Yes, we have said that we are looking to surface some of this stuff more easily in XAML, but this is a continuous ongoing development. So that layer is there because it fits more above DirectX, and it's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be sort of XAML based, but yeah, we are looking to make the composition effects more easily applied in some cases, but yeah, you've always got that code layer in the middle for more advanced scenarios, but we are working over time at making those features easier to add to your XAML-based UIs. Yeah, we know it's a bit of code at the moment, but it is something that we are going to be developing on over time. So expect more stuff to come along with that.
Thank you.
Copy-paste.
Yes.
On WebGL.
Yeah.
No more questions? One more. Last question. The first question and the last question. Very nice.
this is difficult. some news about Surface phones?
I'm sorry?
Surface phones?
I don't know anything about those.
It's difficult.
No, we haven't announced any future phone devices. I expect that someday we will announce future phone devices. We definitely have engineering teams working on, continuing to work on phone hardware, but nothing to share today.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Good question, though. All right. Thank you all. This Thank was you. Great. We'll be hanging out in the reception if you want to talk in a smaller setting, but we appreciate the time.